There will be spoilers ahead. Lots of spoilers, so be careful, won't you?
From the mists of legendary, in a land before time, back before the words of humans were recorded in shaky scratches on stone or wood, when things were rotten, in a kingdom of violence and death, as blood flowed like molasses of mystery, past the knowing of knowing, it was foretold that one day would come a greasy man of sinew, golden tan, and flowing wig. At his side would be two thieving furred noodles. Behind him, a great cat would prowl, his fur unnaturally tainted with paint of spray. And above him would circle an eagle that too was well acquainted with pigments dark. Lo, he would stride through the desert with great purpose, the seriousness of his task heavy on his brow. And what great quest drove this young, muscled warrior?
Max Mike Movies! This would normally...
Wow, that's uncanny.
Is it? This would normally be the end of our series, because I wanna and you're gonna like it, but the heck with that, we're extending ourselves for you.
Yeah!
The Beastmaster is indeed our film this week, starring Mark Singer, Tanya Roberts, and some dyed animals. But who stars in this mess? That one, over there, shaking his staff to the great god R, is Arr. Max R wants your children, Levine. What say you, Max?
Arr, mateys, I be a pirate god. Arr.
Apparently, yes.
Yes. And you shall be ripped in two and torn apart. See what I did there.
See what you... did there. I don't like it.
Did I mention R?
Twice. And me, I'm the podo to his kodo, Mike.
I have the codokies!
Loose. Beastmaster is indeed a big, big motion picture, but before we get to that, we're gonna get to the...
poll question.
Last week, all we wanted to know was, what singer or band that hasn't had a non-concert movie made with them deserves one? Here's what y'all had to say. On Facebook, Regan McStravick was first with, quote, Tom Lehrer, end quote. Ooh, good choice. Thanks, Regan. Although I have this feeling he would want to do it.
He probably wouldn't, but he's dead now, so he can't say anything. Yeah, I know.
Dave wrote us, quote, I suppose nobody will ever outdo Head for a non-concert band movie. Heh. See our entire episode
on Head.
On a more serious note, I like historical dramas, so if one were to do a period piece about Bessie Smith or Cole Porter, that might be fun. Hey, how about what was her name?
Ma Rainey.
Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. That's close.
Yeah. See our entire episode on Ma Rainey's Black Bottom.
Yeah. On the Japan side of things, Tantan Tanaki is my favorite Japanese non-concert movie. It is nominally about the Checkers, but actually they are a group of Tanaki masquerading as pop stars, end quote. I've seen Tantan Tanaki, and it is indeed fun and weird.
Confusing, but...
Thanks, Dave. Steve Kellner responded to Dave, quote, already a Cole Porter story, though it has a heterosexual love story built in, so we definitely need a new one, end quote. Huh, I did not know that Cole Porter was gay. Taking a brief look into his life, I agree. He does need a good movie. Thanks, Steve. How's that go? Yes. Gay. But I can say that because Max is Jewish. Richard Tatum offered, quote, Thomas Dolby, end quote. Sorry, I couldn't hear you. Noise reduced. Thanks, Richard.
Sorry, I couldn't hear that. You know, I can't see it either because apparently I've been blinded by science.
Derek Steele said, quote, I have three things to say. It is bizarre to me that a movie was made about a Neil Diamond impersonator versus Neil himself. Haven't seen it, but there must be something compelling about that guy's story. Two, B.B. King comes to mind, but apparently it is in production. 3.
Oh, cool.
Not a specific person, but would be curious to see a story telling how player pianos were pivotal in copyright law and music publishing, explicitly in mechanical rights. Look it up. Fascinating stuff, end quote.
Huh.
That last one sounds interesting, even if player pianos are notoriously bad actors. Thank you, Derek. Charles Forsythe answered, quote, a movie set in the Guar universe would be fun, end quote. Might be, but so far their only appearance I know of is in Empire Records, see our entire episode, blah, 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 blah.
Well, thank you, they've also got their video, The Cuttlefish of Cthulhu.
Oh.
And the one problem, of course, is with Guar is, if you approach the stage, you will die.
Thank you, Eddie. Over to the feedback, we have a letter from Bill O'Lading Max.
Bill O'Lading, Bill O'Lading, Bill O'Lading.
And he sent us, quote, hello, gorgeous.
Oh, thank you.
Few artists embody raw ambition and transformative talent the way Barbara Streisand does. I'd like to nominate her. I'd focus on the month leading up to her 1964 Broadway debut in Funny Girl. It'd be the perfect biopic lens. At that moment, she was not yet an icon. She was a young Jewish woman from Bushwick, defying conventional beauty standards, battling critics who said she wasn't leading lady material in the middle of a tumultuous marriage to Elliot Gould?
Yeah, believe it or not.
I don't. And carrying the weight of a major production on untested shoulders. And what a performance! It catapulted her into immortality. I'd love to see that on screen. Runner-up, Madonna. A biopic has been in the works for a while, but forever delayed because Madonna is just that, extra. I don't particularly like Madonna as a person, but a biopic featuring her early days in Detroit, move to New York, and her scratching and biting to get into show business has a lot of potential. Branching out, I'd also like to see more versions of A Star Is Born. It's never too soon for number 5, 6, 7. I'd like to see a gender reversal where a young up-and-coming male singer is brought into the limelight by a troubled, fading female star. For
that
a long while,
be a different team.
For a long while, they were seeking to feature Beyoncé in A Star Is Born. After almost a decade of scheduling problems, she publicly walked away from the project, resulting in Lady Gaga, Bradley Cooper's version being pursued. Or a complete switcheroo and have them both be lesbians or both gay men. Some fables only grow stronger through multiple retellings, end quote. Wow. Okay. Another version of A Star Is Born. You know, let's put Weird Al in it, then I might watch it. Thanks, Bill. Always love your missives.
I would definitely see that with Weird Al and some up-and-coming accordion player.
Yeah, maybe we need another film version of State Fair, because it's been a while for that, too. There's at least two of those, maybe three. Mm. Moving to the hot line. We have our pal Doris Max. Are you ready for the steam?
Oh, I'm never entirely ready, but that's what makes it so sweet.
Let's listen.
Hit me.
Hello, Max Mike Movies. Hi, Max. This is Doris Zimpelmeyer here to answer your poll question. What band or musician who hasn't made a movie would you like to see in a non-concert movie? That's an interesting question. There's a lot out there, but I'm going to go with two. I'm going to go with one that I would kind of like to see, like in a biopic, or is it a biopic? I never knew how to pronounce that one. Anyway, there's a band called Bad Company, and I think Paul Rodgers has got one of the best voices ever in rock and roll, and I would like to see more about that band. It was not an easy band. The other one, just kind of put him in like a, you know, like a Help movie or a Hard Day's Night or something like that. Let's see the B-52s. Don't you think it'll be fun to have kind of an adventure movie with the B-52s? Anyway, those are my answers. I hope you guys have a wonderful week. And I'll see you later, Max. You know what we're doing this week. Bye.
Well, those were out of left field. Bad Company and the B-52s. Well, thanks,
B-52s,
Doris.
I could definitely see. I don't know
nothing about Bad Company, but well, Rock Lobster to you too, cool. Doris.
Yeah, yeah. And I hope you're living in your own private Idaho.
Oh, that's funny. The light's still blinking.
Oh yeah, there's
somebody. Wait, you don't suppose?
Could this be? Couldn't be that lucky.
I really hope it is. Oh, is my hair on straight? Oh, so excited!
Sit up straight. Sit up straight.
Hello, Max Mike Movies. This is real Julia Roberts. Oh, I know it's been a long time, but I've been doing 6 different films and the voiceover for the reboot of Charlie Chan and the Chancrat. Oh, I'm not supposed to talk about that. Well, you can cut that part out. I just wanted to answer your question this week. Which band or singer deserves a non-concert movie? And I'm going to go with my favorite band, Bare Naked Ladies. Oh, even the title of that band just makes me giggle. So yeah, I think their music is just a lot of fun, and I think they would be great in a non-concert film. So, that's my answer. Oh, toodles, I have to run back to the set. Bye.
Oh, I can't believe she took time out from her amazingly busy schedule to drop an answer on our little hotline. Thank you, Real Julia Roberts, TM.
The room's spinning.
Bare Naked Ladies. Huh, that could be fun.
That could be entertaining.
I like Bare Naked Ladies.
I don't know much about them, like their history, but...
I know the lead singer, Stephen Page, left after a while, but and they got a new one. But yeah. But what about you, Max? What musico would you like to see just dropped into a film?
I'd like to see They Might Be Giants. I think they could be a lot of fun. As far as like people who should have movies made about them, I got to agree with the Tom Lehrer one. I would love to see a movie about his life. Although, admittedly, I don't think it's very dramatic.
No, I mean, he taught mathematics at Harvard.
Yeah, and then out, so I think at Caltech. I'm not sure.
You know, it would have to end up being a film like The Aviator, where it's like, oh, he's doing the music, he's funny, and then we get to like 1960, whatever, where a psychiatrist said, you know what is happening is you're getting depressed because you're writing all these songs. You should stop doing that. And then the movie ends.
Something like that.
Yeah.
He stopped writing because he said political satire became obsolete when Henry Kissinger was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. But interesting question. Now, They Might Be Giants. I'd love to see that.
Okay.
And what about you, Mike, if that really is your name?
I mean, if we originally weren't talking biopics, we were talking about like literally the band shows up like, oh, I don't know, the Ramones in Rock and Roll High School, something like that.
Yep.
I am a real fan of Billie Eilish. I think she's really interesting, and I think she might be really fun.
Sure.
Also, if you want what I'm guessing is a very nice, neat, organized band to show up, the Decemberists might be fun.
That's right.
Such a weird
That's right.
Band.
A hotel room trashed by the Decemberists. Toilet paper neatly folded, beds made.
Yeah, everybody nice.
Generous, but not arrogant tip.
Everybody in bed at 9.
Yeah, yeah.
But going back to our show and the film, The Blues Brothers, people like Lightnin' Hopkins, Muddy Waters, or Aretha Franklin, just...
Oh, Aretha, yes.
Yeah. Just, but there's so many people I would like to just see show up and basically do their thing and grind that movie to a halt where everyone just goes, oh, yeah, talent. You know?
Well, of course, we do have Catalina Caper and Little Richard.
Yeah, we have that.
We have that.
We'll always have that, just like that rash we can't get rid of.
Yeah. Leave my rash out of this.
Yes. Well, that was an excellent question, Max. Thank you for posing it.
Oh, sure.
And thank you all for answering it. What I would like to know is, what is your favorite fantasy film? Swords and sorcerers, witches, knights, dragons, dungeons. Which movie of the genre really turns you on? Correspond with us in the usual ways, which we'll go through at the end of the show. But for now, back to Beastmaster.
Beastmaster! The facts.
Budget, $9 million. Take.
Wow.
$14.1 million. Well, that explains the sequel and the other sequel and the TV show. Yikes. Mark Singer showed up in everything except the TV show.
Really?
Yep.
He was in all three sequels.
Yep. Only saw one of them, and that was enough. Thank you.
Oh, man, you'd think he wouldn't have time doing all the...
the V reprisals.
right, and... Yeah, I got nothing.
Yeah. He's 78 now.
Wow.
I know, right? Doesn't that hurt?
Wow.
He was born in 1948. Oh. Yeah, I looked it up.
Oh. My God, my hip just broke all by itself.
All right, back to trivia. This is technically a lost film. The original negative, instead of being safely stored in some kind of preservation facility, was stored in someone's house, which was then sold and, well, ask the ferrets. They know where the film cans are. The eagle, not the most cooperative actor in this movie. To make it fly when needed, it was dropped out of a hot air balloon.
Oh, I would have paid to see that.
Fly, my just monkey, fly. Yeah. Okay, you know, maybe the bird wasn't so bad. When they were just starting to film the scenes with the bear, It broke loose, turned on its handler, and sent him to the hospital.
Oh, geez.
Once they finally got the bear under control, they turned to the kid playing young Dar and said, "Okay, we're ready to film your scenes now."
Mom!
Yeah. Okay, bears.
The bear.
How many tigers does it take to play one tiger on screen?
Four. How many? Four. They had to have four tigers on set. Yep.
And how many ferrets to play two ferrets?
I'm going to go with 8.
25. Dear gods, that's a lot of noodles.
That's a lot of oh my god, the place must have smelled wonderful.
Well, apparently the big problem is you can't train ferrets. But you can coax them with food. So that's the best you can hope for. Yeah.
Yeah. How do you make them fly? I want to know how you make a ferret jump 6 feet in the air.
You fling, huh?
Yep.
The first time Mark Singer and John Amos saw each other in costume, they burst out laughing.
Yes, clearly they come from a time before pants.
Well, Mark called it his hula skirt, but there you go. Director Don Coscarelli caught the attention of one Dino De Laurentiis with this film. Dino offered him the chair to direct Conan. Coscarelli turned it down because he thought the script was bad. Ah, bastion of taste, ouch. Don Coscarelli.
When Don Coscarelli says your script is bad,
When Don Coscarelli talks, people listen. It is a well-known fact that this movie influenced the formation of two of the earliest cable stations, TBS, whose initials represent the Beastmaster station, and HBO, which represents, hey, Beastmaster's on, is totally true, and thank you, Dennis Miller.
You're making that up. Yeah.
No, but Dennis Miller did. Yes, it's true. They dyed a tiger for this movie. Well, four of them. Why?
How'd you like that job?
Is anybody's guess. To piss off Mark Singer, Tanya Roberts would flirt with young Josh Millard, who played Dar's younger brother, Tal.
Ew.
That's not, I feel funny. Apparently,
was he like 14?
Josh apparently didn't mind.
I'll bet
because
he did.
He was, quote, interested in girls at that time. Yes, future playmate, God. Tanya
Creepy.
Roberts. Yeah. Speaking of Tanya Roberts, the role in this movie helped Tanya Roberts land her part in A View to a Kill. Gee, thanks.
All together now. Stacy, look out. A blimp.
Speaking of parts, Demi Moore almost got the role of Kiri, but because of executive interference, she was tossed aside for Tanya.
Oh, good
Bullet
Lord.
Dodged.
Yeah.
Also, speaking of parts, when you can't get Klaus Kinski, you get the next best thing, Rip Torn.
Wait, what? Yeah, that's what Werner Herzog always says.
Yeah, if I cannot get Klaus Kinski, I get Rip Torn, yeah?
Get me Rip. Rip, you got to come make my movie.
Our flawless impersonation of Werner Herzog. Yes.
Flawless.
It's for you, Vince. Mm-hmm. This movie was roughly based near a book of the same name by Andre Norton, but because it was so different, Andre asked that her name not be associated with the film. Always a
good
sign of quality, starting with the letter K. And so much more. Max, do you know anything behind the scenes of this cinematic masterpiece before we get to the plot?
Just a couple of things about Tanya Roberts, and no, I don't mean those couple of things. I mean,
are there any more things? Okay, go ahead.
She, I believe, is the only one to have the distinction of being both a Charlie's Angel and a Bond girl. And I don't know if you notice, her eyes kind of change color a few times in this movie.
You were looking at her eyes? Really?
Well, sometimes they have a close-up, and that's all I can see. And okay. They were very big. She wore sort of electric blue contact lenses for most of her career, but she couldn't wear them for very long.
Oh.
So that's why her eyes go from, like, to blue.
Oh. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well,
randomly.
I think that really informs her acting ability. Oh, but we'll get
or
to
what
that.
Now?
Nothing. Let's get to that pesky old plot,
yeah.
Shall we?
Oh, do let's.
Oh, come on. This is not nearly as bad as some of the other things I've had to do. Trust me.
No, that's true.
In the some when, there is an evil priest named Mayax. Oh, maybe we can get him for the show. And
Mayax Mike movies?
Eh. And Mayax, or Maylox, is really into child sacrifices. He wants to sacrifice the king's unborn son to the god Ar, patron god of pirates, I guess. Not least of which because there's a prophecy that the king's son will grow up to kill Mayax. Well, he can't have that. But the king banishes him. Before he's fully away, one of his witches transfers the unborn son to a cow. She takes the cow to a fire, and is just about to do the dirty deed when along comes Carl Reiner to the rescue. He kills witch and takes the baby to raise as his own in Longtown. Did it not look like Carl Reiner? Because it does.
A little.
Okay. So he takes the baby to raise as his own in Longtown. There, Dar grows up, though it seems he has an odd power. He can communicate with animals. Huh. Weird. Well, never mind. He grows up the rest of the way, happily tilling fields. Suddenly, the Bat Humongous and his deadly Jun Raiders show up and kill everyone. Dar's dog drags him to safety and dies. Dar wakes up and is very sad, vowing vengeance on the nasty Juns. He goes off in search of them and comes across a passel of animal pals. There's Poto and Kodo, the ferrets, Rao, the tiger, and, no one named the eagle, huh? Well, the eagle! Then they
Murder
run into
chicken.
Sure. Then they run into slave girl Kiri, and it's love at first sight. But she has to go back to the temple now. Sorry, no time for sex. Bye! Smitten, Dar follows and runs into new friends Seth and Tal, who, unbeknownst to Dar, are from his original hometown. Seth was a king's guard, and Tal is his half-brother and heir to the throne. If they could just get rid of the nasty Mayax and save the king. Well, with Dar's help, they plan to do just that. And save the king they do. But the king won't listen to reason, which comes from, Dar, and insists on attacking at dawn. Dar is sent away. The attack happens off screen, and the king loses. It's up to Dar and the Menagerie a Trois to take down the evil Mayax and save Kiri and become heroes, which they do. Hooray! Everyone's safe, happy, and... Wait, Dar decides he doesn't want to be king, so just wanders off? Huh? The end.
The film.
You forgot the flying membrane.
Did not forget them. There's too much. I'm leaving them out, and we'll come back to why I left them out. So, yeah.
Okay.
You mean Batman? Okay.
I would even go with Bat. They look like, hi, we wandered over from an H.P. Lovecraft movie.
I guess, but anyway. Let's, first question. And I think I know the answer to this, but I'm not positive. Max, did you see this in the theater?
No.
Oh, you weren't with us.
I never did. I first saw it on videotape.
I saw it with our friend Dan, among other people. Okay. Did we have fun?
I'll bet.
Oh, that's right, because you would have been in college at the time. That's right.
Yep.
Well, I did see it in the theater. And, hey, Beastmaster's on. But let's get to the cast, shall we? Because Mark Singer.
Ah, yes. Mark of the piercing blue eyes and forgettable voice.
And pecs of tan.
Yes, I mean, knees of fringe, yes.
Let's face it, he's built nice.
He looks good in this.
I don't think he drinks any water, but I think he's built nice.
Yeah, I want to know where he finds all his hair care and chest waxing products in this primitive society.
Apparently, I wouldn't have guessed this. Apparently, when they were filming, it wasn't actually hot. It was actually really cold. So after takes, they had to go huddle under blankets and stuff. So,
oh, dear.
Yeah, which is mean because like they take the clothes off everybody in this film. Like nobody, except for Rip Torn, which will,
Thank God for that. But yeah, he's very good at twirling the sword rather like a drum majorette.
Yeah.
And but he loves that move so much, he does it like, what, 5-6 times in the movie?
Well, the funny thing is that he doesn't really fight very much. He mostly sixes animals on things until the end where he is in a fight scene. We'll get back to the fight scenes, but he's nice to look at.
He takes up space.
He fills the Speedo just fine. I mean, but let's face it, this is not the kind of film that's looking for big acting prowess. The same way Conan was, and see our entire episode on Conan.
Yeah.
So he's best known for this, let's face it.
Well, this in V.
But best known for this.
Yeah.
Then we have Tanya Roberts, the thespian's thespian.
And she fills out her slave costume nicely.
Well, and she at one point she doesn't. We actually see... Her skills flopping about in the breeze. Tanya Roberts is somebody's girlfriend. I'm going to put it right out there. She is somebody's girlfriend. I saw her in this. I vaguely remember her from Charlie's Angels, the way I vaguely remember Charlie's Angels. I vaguely remember her as Sheena, Queen of the Jungle. And
oh, God, that's right.
Doesn't she show up in a Conan movie or something. No, it's not. She's,
no, that's...
No, she wasn't Bridget. She was Bridget Nielsen who played Red Sonja, and he showed up in that. She's terrible.
she is not much of an actor. She looks nice. She's very pretty.
Yeah.
And that's about it. She's there for eye candy. They give her a whole lot to do. Not that they give anybody a lot to do.
I think that's probably a wise choice.
Yeah.
Rip Torn as Malox.
Rip Torn.
I mean, he's trying.
I'm sorry. This is a waste of Rip Torn. Torn can be a lot of fun. And especially when you give him enough scenery to chew and some decent lines. But most of his lines are, kill him.
Yeah.
By the way, did I mention kill him?
Oh, by the way.
While you're at it, kill him.
Yes. And they also, for some reason, gave him extra nose. And I don't know why.
Big prosthetic nose. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe they're implying that Max is Jewish. I don't know.
I will say this. When he's being evil, he is obviously enjoying it. It's just,
he's having fun.
There's not much to it, really.
No. So. Like I say, they don't give him anything to do. They don't give anybody much to do. Yeah, again, it's a shame because he's fun.
We don't see much of Rip Torn, but we do see a lot of John Amos, almost all of John Amos.
We almost see little John Amos a couple of times, too.
You know what? I got to hand it to John Amos. He is totally professional in this. He is doing as best he can in a role that you're sure, as soon as they said cut, he started laughing at after every take.
He sometimes seems to laugh in the middle of the takes for no reason, but...
I just feel bad for John Amos because he got sort of a raw deal. He got kicked off Good Times, and he's a really good actor. He doesn't show up much. He didn't get enough work, but he was a really good actor.
He was terrific on The West Wing. He was really good.
Yeah. So, you know, here's John Amos doing his John Amos thing, and sure, good for him. Mm-hmm. Joshua Milrad as Tal, who we also see way too much of.
Could you please give this? I wish they would invent pants.
Yeah, that's uncomfortable. I don't need to see anybody that much of anybody that young. But I guess he's dressed as everyone else, and he's fine. He apparently won some sort of award for that portrayal, but whatever.
Really?
Young Actors Award. Sure. Rod Loomis is Zed. Sure. He's barely there and dubbed.
He has like 8 lines.
We have Billy Jane, who actually became an actor after this, playing Young Dar, who is there for 10 seconds. He's fine.
Young Dar.
And then there's people and stuff. And who?
Yeah, there's random various other people.
Being the Skull Witches, the sexy Skull Witches, because they are sexy Skull Witches.
They were basically the Butterface Witches.
Butterface?
You never heard that term?
No.
Everything's hot, Butterface.
Oh, okay. Wow. Yeah. They were kind of melty.
Yeah, basically, these are women who are very clearly like models or centerfolds with a lot of latex smacked on their face.
I just couldn't figure out why.
I don't know.
You can't be three sexy witches and be pretty?
I also don't get, every time they die, they cackle and one of them turns into the Holy Ghost.
I guess. And then there's red smoke dove. And stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Turns into a white bird and flies away.
But before we even get to that, we get the opening credit, which I don't know about you, but when I see a credit like this, I know I'm in for some quality entertainment. Leisure Investment Company. We love their films.
Yeah, that just screams quality.
As soon as I saw that, it's like, suits with big lapels and bright colors. Okay.
Why don't you just call it Tax Write-Off Cinema?
Also, the theme, did the theme song remind you of anything?
It reminded me of every 80s fantasy movie.
Or, more particularly, the theme to Battlestar Galactica.
No, because
it sounds, it's not the same guy, and there's no mention about, you know, any kind of lawsuit or anything, but dear gods, it's exactly the same thing. And during the opening credits, what do we get? Images that look like bad animal selfies.
Yeah.
Like literally out of focus or like they're about to do something, but it's, you know.
It looks like some of the stuff from Day of the Animals. It makes no sense.
Yeah. We open up and we see that we have Mayax and he's got his sexy skull witches and they're all telling him, hey, boss, just so you know, it is a prophecy. And it looks like the king's unborn son. You got to do something about that. And
you're
just
as doomed can be.
Yeah. And just as they're going to do something about that, the king pops in and he goes, basically, you better not. No, that's very bad.
You want to kill my unborn son? So you leave. Not we're going to execute you. You're banished.
And then what does Malox do? Malox shows how bad and powerful he is. He gives a sidelong glances to two of his robed priests, who then hang themselves for reasons I don't quite understand.
The Judean People's Front crack suicide squad!
I guess, and then suddenly the king goes, yes, that's very bad. You need to go now. It's like, just kill him! Oh, right, then we wouldn't have a story. Okay.
We wouldn't have no picture. But also, just the entrance of the king when his warriors stroll in.
Yeah.
I mean, it's supposed to be intimidating as these large, barely dressed barbarian types leap. No, not leap. Wander in and sort of stand there. You know, it's supposed to be an impressive, imposing entrance. And it's just like, okay, I found the little X on the ground where I'm supposed to stand. I'll just hang out here.
Hey, Malox, the third string football squad's here. There like is a lot really, of meat in this movie. Yeah.
Really sets the tone for the movie. It's like they're not really even trying.
And then we have a scene that has baffled me since 1982. So the last sneaky skull witch, sexy sneaky skull witch, stays behind as poor Rip Torn is shown out of the city by somebody pointing and saying, get out, I guess. And she sneaks an ox into the king and queen's bedroom.
Brings a friggin' cow into the king and queen's bedroom.
Yeah.
And I don't mean like she materializes. I mean, she walks in with a cow.
Yeah.
I can just, well, there's something you don't see every day, Chauncey.
Oh, I don't know, Edgar. The worst part, too, is if you look through the bedroom door of the king and queen, you realize that apparently they live outside the wall because there is nothing there.
There's nothing. Empty.
But they bring the ox into the king and queen's bedroom. The sneaky, sexy skull witch pours Siloam lightstick fluid over their necks, which, okay, I can see this as being a spell or a potion, and it immobilizes them.
Uh-huh.
And then she waves over the bloated belly of the queen. And we look over at the cow, and we watch the belatexed cow's belly inflate. And you just have to sit there and go, Max, I'm going to have to need a Grunkle Stan. You look at the cow, and you go,
oh, come on! You look at the cow, and you can practically hear, as it inflates.
Well, also, and I don't understand how cow uteri work, but my feeling is, oh, the kid's dead.
Yeah, because the umbilical doesn't have anything to attach to.
No. And
kid's dead.
Yeah.
And suffocating.
But so she sneaks the cow out of town. And I got to say, though, she goes to the woods where there's this really cool blue fire. And I'm not actually sure how they did it, but the blue fire is really cool.
There are crystals. There are chemicals you can throw into fire to make it burn that color.
Yeah, but it was a really big one. It was really cool. Mm. But apparently it has to be, they have to kill the unborn child. But apparently if it's born from a cow, it doesn't count. So
sure.
Yeah. And then Carl Reiner shows up.
Born.
And Carl Reiner saves the young baby, who's obviously not that young.
Yep, because Carl Reiner's lucky he has the glaive with him.
Or whatever that stupid thing is. And the worst part is there's this little montage when he's teaching his young son, Dar. I'm guessing he's like 10, 11 at this point. And he's teaching him how to use this thing. And it basic Dar never uses it. It like it almost just never shows up. He just has a sword later in the movie.
He kills a guard with it once.
Yeah. But that's it's like about it looks like it's supposed to be a plot point, like, my father gave me this.
Yeah, it's supposed to be like,
But, you know, no. And then, of course, that's when the bear shows up and the kid goes, I'm not doing this scene. But, of course, the bear shows up and suddenly, Dar, great name for the kid, Dar. Yeah.
I guess it's based that's appropriate. On his look. He always has this look like, Dar.
I'm sure Carl turned to this village and goes, what? He looks like a Dar. And
he's not wrong.
He mind controls the bear. And they give us this wonderful quote where the father says, to touch a beast up here. Good, because you don't want to touch it down there,
no,
do you?
No, you really don't.
And then, next scene, Dar grows up blonde. I would like you to explain that to me, Max. He had almost black hair, and he grows up blonde. Could you tell me how that happens?
He is from the clan of L'Oreal.
Or Team Breck.
Because he is worth it.
I guess. In a scene very much like they will have in Conan, his entire village is killed and put to death and burned, and it's very, very sad. And then he goes and has some rock salt.
By the way, have you noticed, I realize why he falls in love with Kiri instantly. There are almost no women in that town. There's like two.
Oh, one of them's like mom. I guess, or somebody's
not
mom.
Not his.
Well, I guess not. I guess he doesn't have one. We don't really dwell there. We'll dwell other places later, and we'll get to the
maybe
dwelling.
Maybe they took the cow home with them, and that was mom, but...
Well, apparently you can have human children, so why not? Yeah, ooh, that's a good one. We're going to keep that cow. It has babies. Yeah. Okay.
And Dar is off doing something in the fields where nothing is growing.
It's grass.
Yeah, and yeah, apparently he's big hacking crop of it. Grass. And then suddenly the
bad guys.
Jun horde.
Yeah. Oh, I have to say, though, after he's dragged to safety by his dog, Crypto.
His incredibly muscular dog, apparently. There are some immensely strong animals in this.
Oh, we'll get to that. Oh, will we get to that. Yeah. But I got to say, he's not sad very long. As soon as he meets Kiri, he's like, oh, I made for TV love you. And then, you know. However, we find out Dara's a rapist. That's great.
Well, he doesn't actually rape her. He just sort of assaults her lightly. But it's funny. It's supposed to be funny.
Yeah.
Ugh. Sorry, I have to leave. I don't have time to be mauled by you.
No. I have to run back to the temple, which we know where that is. It's the big pyramid thing, back where he originally came from. Dar doesn't go there, though. Dar goes off to the magic sack tree, because he has sudden onset bat people.
That's right. He meets an NPC with no lines who gets eaten.
Yeah, and some more NPCs with no lines who eat people. So, Max, I don't usually ask this because I know you were not part of the production of this movie. I would like you to explain the bat people.
No.
I suppose that's a reasonable answer.
So, I would, but it's a secret.
Apparently, even to us.
Yeah. Now, I don't know what the hell they're supposed... No one ever says, oh, you have met the... Blah, 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 or the... Yeah, they are these very tall, largely featureless guys with membrane wings attached to their arms who wrap themselves around victims and dissolve them.
Yeah.
And they worship a murder chicken.
Well, they've also got glowing sacks hanging from the trees, which I don't know what the significance of that is.
Yeah, were they their eggs, or is that where they sleep? Or we don't know. We're never told. They're just sort of, hi, we have these costumes and this makeup. We're using them.
Like, literally, he's just seen Kiri run off going, I have to go to the temple and be executed now. And he's like, oh, that's real sad. And he looks at the top of a hill and's like, oh, there's a tree up there. I should probably go find out what that is. And then he gets there, and there's some poor guy who doesn't get to talk in a cage who's obviously being kept for dinner. And he lets the guy out, who immediately gets eaten and dissolved. And the bad people are obviously going to eat Dar, too, because, you know, there's a lot of meat on that there, warrior.
Yep.
And luckily, Eagle, who doesn't get a name, shows up. And the bad people are literally, oh, you got a bird? Oh, we like you now.
Hulu si bagumba.
Pretty much. Oh, that's released the prisoners. You know that. What you want is Oganza or Osu.
Apparently, because they have a statue, which if you squint and turn your head, kind of looks like an eagle.
I just wanted the eagle to poop on it. I really wanted the eagle to poop on it.
You know it did. They just didn't show it.
So I'm going to go right out there. We could cut the bat people out. Don't need them. They add nothing to the movie except for the very end, which is
a Deus Ex bat people at the end.
Yeah. And should we get to this
which
now?
They
sure
could
not.
Have done some other way.
What do you think of the pacing of this film?
Now, surprisingly, this film's like 2 hours long.
Oh, yes.
Which is kind of long for a fantasy film.
Yes.
I think the pacing's kind of uneven. There are parts where it really does drag, and there are parts when it moves along fairly well.
Like what? Oh, I want examples. Well, if you're going to say it moved along fairly well, I want to know where.
I like the scenes with the animals. I think those tend to move along reasonably well when the animals are doing a thing.
Well, that's because you actually wanted to see some decent acting. Oops!
Well, yeah. Kinda. Yeah, other than that, I mean, I guess when they're storming the castle, it doesn't move too slowly.
No, but it is not one of the better choreographed sword fight scenes I've ever seen.
Oh, Lord. The fight choreography in this is just, it hurts. Yeah. It hurts to watch.
I mean, you can just hear the thudding of dull metal against dull metal. And
yeah, and it's very much the, I am aiming for the sword.
I want to say that, and I saw this as a comment by Siskel and or Ebert, that it wasn't so much that it was bad, it was just too long and dull. And I would say that you could cut a half an hour out of this film and I would be perfectly happy.
Easily.
And honestly, the Bat people would go. They literally had nothing.
Nothing.
Although, to be fair, at least when that final fight happens, it's not just Dar showing up and going, hey, I can kill everyone. Hey, I'm fine. Because that's what happens. It's like they send away, no, you must do my plan. I am King Zed. You must do what I say. Oh, he's a coward. Go away. Be gone. I'm going to go cry now.
Freak. For some reason, that really upsets him.
Yeah.
Like, so, hey, King Jerk, you're a big jerky king who's a jerk.
So even though Seth, played by John Amos, tells King Zed, hey, the magic ring I just destroyed told Malox all of our plans. Are you sure you want to do this? Not that it's much of a plan. We're going to attack at dawn. Woo! King Zed said, yes, we must take back our city. Okay, and then off screen they have a fight.
Yeah, we never see them attack the city. We never see them get their asses handed to them, captured.
No.
It's just like, a thing happens. Okay, we lost.
And we're sad.
Bummer.
But luckily, Zacco. Apparently his name is Zacco.
Because when he introduced Sacco, like Sacco and Vanzetti.
I was just thinking, are you a clown? Do you amuse me? I don't know. Zacco.
Like, hi, he seems to be being set up as comic relief, but they forgot the comic part.
Well, also his motivation makes no sense because let's get to this. So apparently R hates kids. Don't know why, he just hates them. So we have to sacrifice children. You realize that your population is going down while you do that, right? Who's going to take care of you when you're old there, Malox? Because you're going to need that real soon.
He wants to give them all treacle tarts.
Yeah, and he wants to give them to R. So this young girl is being, and she's trying her best not to laugh, not doing a great job at it. And she's being thrown to the flames, and she catches herself on the edge of the pit. And lo and behold, the eagle flies down, scoops her up, and flies off with her. And then we get some really bad animation of her kicking while she's being dragged off. What'd you think of that scene?
Now, well, technically, an eagle is strong enough to carry off a very young lamb. But that's like 20 pounds, maybe.
Not even. Not even can an eagle hang. No.
Or 6-year-old child? No.
No.
Maybe it could have dragged her a little bit.
I think it would have annoyed her. That's as far as it could go.
I think it could have torn off a limb. They are very powerful birds.
They just don't have the mass for it. They don't have the thrust. So
there is no way it could have picked her up. That's just ridiculous.
But for whatever. So Dar sends his eagle friend Eagle to go.
I'll call my furry friends.
And then he shows up later that night under the cover of darkness and or dullness because how did he get back into town? Oh, that's right. We don't care.
It doesn't matter.
So he shows back to Zacco's house and gives Zacco the kid. And Zacco says, oh, anything for you. Anything. Thank you for saving my child. And the next time he sees the ferrets, he's like, oh, why did it have to be you? Not now. Leave me alone. Oh, the troubles I have.
I'm a coward. I don't want to help anymore because apparently I forgot that you saved my kid.
Yeah. So whatever. But then, of course, once the child is saved, we have a wonderful quote from Malox who says, R wants this master of the beasts. And I wanted him to then say, this beast master. Of course, that will come later.
Master of baiters. Yeah, I mean, just come out and say it. Yeah. You know?
Then we meet up with John Amos and what's his name? Josh Milrad in the woods. And that's when John Amos sends the guy from Midnight Oil down into the tiger pit.
That's right. Ah, how could I sleep when my bed is burning?
Yeah. I also have a question, Max. So Dar is in Aruk. That's the name of the town. I guess it's the symbol of the pyramids is a big A, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. So why did he leave? Isn't Kiri the person he's looking for, what's the word, there?
He forgot. He forgot she was there.
So he leaves and runs into Seth and Tal. And then they're like, oh, yeah, by the way, that's my cousin, Kiri. We have to go rescue her. Where is she?
A lot of inbreeding in this country.
Well, we'll get to that too. But so Beastmaster, of course, sends off his eagle, to go looking for her. And she's off at some river somewhere to be taken.
Way away from the city.
Sylvia's being taken to being sacrificed over there.
Yeah, because she's supposed to be, the sacrifice happens at the pyramid, which is in the middle of the city.
And the desert.
No.
Well, no, Max, to be fair, it's in the middle of the model, but
oh, excuse me, yes, the city of Modelvania.
Well, it's the little Beastmaster playset, because that's it's so obvious it's a model.
Yes.
So there's, yes. The distance in this makes no sense. So they lead the sacrificial versions away to this river, and that somehow is that back entrance to the temple, because then we get into there, and we find out that Kiri is from an ancient sect of warriors. I can't even say it.
She's basically some sort of martial arts monk or... And I still love, there's a whole thing where she opens a secret door and disappears because she had to change clothes.
Yeah, but what does she do? She puts on a belt.
Yeah, that's it. She has to leave. It's a big dramatic thing, sneaking away. Oh, is she going to betray them? No, wardrobe change.
Yeah, and doesn't take them in to get some weapons or whatever, but whatever.
No. How do you like to deal with those, I don't know, heavy metal dominatrices or... Basically, they have an army of the Gimp from Pulp Fiction.
No. Those were the famous fetish knights. Have you not heard of them?
the knight of the fetish, yeah.
Well, seriously, it's like these big muscular guys putting into leather bikinis and these big, like, gauntlets and boots and stuff. And it's like, we know what's happening when the director yells cut, because...
Yep. Oh, yeah. And they're wearing fetish knights masks. Yeah. And you notice that one of the ways they make them is they take a seti eel and put it in their ear.
Well, yeah, because, you know... This is City
Alpha 5.
Yeah. I like how the Kiri has to convince Dar. She says, "You will come with us?" And I swear his answer should have been, "I think I just did." But yeah, then they break into the temple thingy, whatever, to find the bad place where... And you know who's in the lead? The tiger. It's a good thing the tiger has a key. That's all I can say.
I don't know how that tiger kept opening all the doors.
Yeah. And then, of course, Kiri has put on her belt, which has a knife on it. So now she's not defenseless, except till later when she is, because we need her to be.
Yeah.
I will also say we need to take a moment of silence because a lot of styrofoams died for this movie.
So much styrofoam. It was a styrofoam bath. Yeah.
And then luckily, finally, when they're talking to Zed, they've got Zed out of jail, and he wants to know who this man is. And somebody says, "He is a friend. He is the Beastmaster." We have our title!
Yep, about an hour and a half into the movie, we have our title.
I love it when they say the title of the movie in the movie. That's always a good, a good thing.
Besides, that's when you take a drink.
So, Max, at one point, Zed is just sitting there looking all sad with his... I don't know why they blindfold him. It's like he's blind. Why are you putting this on his eyes that he doesn't have?
I did.
But Zed, I'm going to set the scene because I want to see if you got the same impression I did. Zed is sitting there, this old man, in a cave, sitting there looking somewhat forlorn. Were there any lines that popped into your head that you thought he might then utter?
"But I'm a poor old man. My legs are weak. My eyes are old and bent."
See, I looked at him and I said, I know what he's going to say. He's going to say, "We need a Santa Claus on Mars."
Chochum wasn't blind.
No, but he still looked like that. Chochum, oh dear God. So yeah, we then hear that they failed off screen because, you know, and then everyone gets captured and put in these new clothes, which quite honestly is the most they've worn for the entire film.
Yep.
And then Zako comes and tells Dar, we need you. We love you. Please come back. We love you so. And Dar just shows up and kills everyone. Like, how lame were the rest of you? You had an army and you all died.
That's the other thing. You notice the entire city, which admittedly is about, I'd say, 60 or 70 people.
Yeah.
They are being held at bay by about 11 guards.
Yeah.
And they don't even use those fetish knights.
Yeah.
I think they use them once to chase him out of the city and they drop a door on three of them.
Yeah.
And that's the last we ever see of them. They're never unleashed on anything.
No, because they'll kill anybody who gets in the way of them killing everyone.
Exactly.
But he gets to the top of the pyramid and brave Kodo, who leaps 6 feet into the air.
Didn't know ferrets could do a sub-zero sub-gum flip or a flying lotus leap. Yeah!
Yeah, and he leaps and he attaches himself limpet-like to the neck of Malox, who then falls nearly killed because ferrets are known for being deadly. But you will be missed, brave Kodo.
What gets me is how utterly unnecessary that was. Dar has beaten Malox in a fight. He stabbed him. And then he just turns around. We all can see he's still moving.
Yeah.
He lurches to his feet, wrenches the knife out. None of this Dar, who is 5 feet away, notices.
I mean, he's named Dar for a reason.
Nobody says, look out behind you. The whole crowd can see him. And no one says, hey, Dar, you want to finish that for us, please?
Yeah.
No. Only the ferret notices. But it's okay because apparently, Poto and Kodo did the nasty in Dar's belt bag. And now we have Poto and Kodo, the next generation, two little baby ferrets.
Yeah, which are very cute. So, so he does it finally kill Malox. But someone then goes, Juns! Juns! And it's like, no, it's just a smudge on the film. You're fine. Because
yeah.
That's literally somebody had a dirty fingerprint and just stuck it on the film. And it's supposed to, I guess, be the smoke of the arriving hordes.
Yeah, or the dust kicked up by their... Yeah, that's some horde. I think there's about 40 people.
I mean,
maybe.
As we've seen, the townspeople are pretty helpless. But luckily, they have exploding tar because...
Yeah, the town is surrounded by an entire moat of tar.
Yeah.
We don't know why.
Nope.
We don't know if it bubbles up naturally, if this is like La Brea or something.
It's real, real hard to get across.
That is the wateriest tar I have ever seen. I've never seen anyone splash in tar.
Yeah. And it's explosive. Don't forget that.
Yeah. And the Jun have absolutely no trouble getting out of it.
Nope. I will give the movie 1 point, though.
Yeah.
When they're fighting the bad guys and the Bat Humongous shows up, and he obviously is going to face off with Dar, because that's a thing. When Dar kills Bat Humongous, the rest of the Juns do not flee or explode or give up. Yep. We have to wait for the bad people.
We killed the big bad. You all have to leave. You're not leaving. Why aren't you leaving?
Yeah. I will give the film that. But this whole extra fight scene, which isn't interesting or well done, and at this point, we're like 20 minutes overtime. I just was like, why do we need this? This could have been the battle that Dar comes at the last minute, helps you win, blah, 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 blah. And then we get the ending. Well, I'm Dar. Now I got everything I wanted. So I'll be leaving now. What?
Yeah.
Did you understand the ending?
No. It's like, I'm going to leave. Yeah, I know. The woman I'm hot for is still here. And I'm not going to stay because... reasons.
Yeah.
Because sequels.
I'm and a really
by
good...
By the way, she catches up with him awfully fast.
Well, everybody catches up with everybody awfully fast in this film. We never see the goddamn river again. Who knows where the hell that is. But, he just leaves. It's like there's been two towns in your life, one of which has been burned and everyone's dead, and you then burn the corpses into the ecology symbol, which I don't understand. And then there's Aruk, which you just liberated, so best leave. But you know what else we need to do is we need to leave this part of the show and get to the ending part where we decide whether we think Beastmaster is a good film.
The finish.
So, Max...
Yes.
Do we think Beastmaster is a good film?
No! I didn't think it was a good film when I first saw it. It's a terrible film, but it is kind of fun.
Yeah?
I mean, it's dopey fun. It's a great film to make fun of.
Uh-huh.
Half my notes were riffs. You know?
Really?
When he hits the Jun leader's helmet. No, my helmet antler! Prepare to die!
He needs a new horn for his helmet.
He turns him an Avenger.
Yeah.
Also, didn't his helmet remind you of the warriors in Deathstalker and the warriors from hell?
Unfortunately. Squeak, squeak, squeak. Yep.
What are we? Bats. What do we want? Insects.
So you originally would have seen this on video, or did you see it on cable? Or
I saw it on, I think it was videotape, yeah.
Okay. And what did you think at the time? Do you remember?
I remember thinking, well, this is pretty dumb.
Yeah.
I think also at the time I was thinking, oh, Tanya Roberts is kind of hot.
I'm gonna still frame on the boobies.
Yeah.
Like,
so, well, you know, we can't rent porn. This is the closest we get.
And gee, my Star Case D scrambler's not working today. There's a deeper.
Oh, there is a deeper.
Yeah. So you think it's a bad movie?
I think it is a very bad movie.
Would you recommend it?
Honestly, it's one of those fun bad movies. It can be one of those, if you watch it with a bunch of people and possibly fermented substances or herbal substances are involved, I think it could be fun.
Mm.
But no, it is not a good movie in any stretch.
Mm.
The direction is unintelligible. The story doesn't make any sense. The acting is workmanlike at best.
Yes, and that it was done by the workmen.
Yeah. What about you? You saw it?
I saw it in the theater. Mm-hmm. And I saw it with one of our friends, Dan. I don't remember who else was there. It is awful. I mean, there was a lot of fantasy films in the 80s, not least of which because we were starting to come into the beginning of the mom and pop video store and they needed content. So they would either take films that had been made in other countries and dub them, or they would make some of the cheaper films, and one of the cheapest films to make or types of films is fantasy films, because all you need to do is take off people's clothes and throw them in the forest and you got a fantasy movie.
Yep, or go out to somewhere in the Southwest and walk around in the desert.
The only two people in this film that deserve to go on and have a career are John Amos and Rip Torn.
Yeah, which and fortunately
that's pretty much what happened.
Yeah.
But I gotta say, just like you, I will recommend this film. If you have not somehow seen Beastmaster, because I'm not even sure that's possible, but if you have not seen Beastmaster, get a group of friends together with the idea that you are not going to keep quiet during this film. You're going to have fun with it. It is a great film to make fun of. It is a great film to suddenly go, wait, what? What happened? Why? Where are they? What? But, you know, it's sort of like it's a what do they call it? A primer for Alzheimer's. Like you'd sit there and going, why are they here now? Where's that river from? Who's this? Why are there bad people?
I'm hungry.
No, it can be a lot of fun, and I think that's the reason that it has been so everlasting in the culture. Now, well, nobody's talked about this in ages, but I do recommend it. It is a riff party film if ever there was one. So
there it is.
Go out. Yes. Find Beastmaster. It's not hard.
Find it. No,
it's probably on your doorstep right now.
It's probably behind you right now.
But you know what else is lurking on your doorstep? It's our poll question. Very simple one. We just want to know, what is your favorite fantasy film? I have a feeling I know what a lot of people's answer is going to be. Yeah. Swords, sorcerers, witches, knights, dragons, dungeons. Which movie of the genre really turns you on? And how can you tell us? Well, I'm glad you asked. You can call our hotline at 617-398-7266, just like real Julia Roberts and our friend Doris. And sometimes we haven't heard from Mystery Date lately. I wonder what happened to our mystery fan.
Mystery Date.
Occasionally, I think Cheese Boy's called us a couple times. Yeah, so if you would like to be one of those people, again, 617-398-7266. If you would like to email us directly with your responses to the show, with ideas for the show, movies we should watch, new series things, or just comments about the show, you can be like Bill O'Lading and email us directly at us at maxmikemovies.com. Hey, we got a website, maxmikemovies.com, which has all of our episodes. Boy, there's a lot of episodes. And our super-duper search function, which allows you to look for a movie that you may want to hear if we've done. Chances are we have. And that is, of course, maxmikemovies.com. And every podcast app. And I do apologize. I don't know why our episode was late this week from Apple's podcast app, but it did show up. We don't have control over that. But any podcast app out there worth its weight in Bumpy Bucks?
Platinum.
Platinum-o. Yes, Platinum-o. William is, of course, we're at Max Mike Movies, because that's the name of the show. And last but not least, there is still a couple of places in social media that we frequent. One of them is Facebook, and the other one is Blueski. Again, Max Mike Movies. But this is not the end of Because I Wanna and You're Gonna Like It. It is just the pre-ending, I guess, because we're going to do a couple format. Yep. I don't know. We're going to do a couple more.
Some more.
And now Max has to choose next week's movie. Max, what are you choosing for next weak. Now, I did inflict Beastmaster on you, so...
You did, so I'm going to inflict something on you. Now, this is a movie I have never seen, but I have heard about for decades.
Oh.
Yeah, and what I have heard is not always the best, shall we say, but it is a Steven Spielberg effort.
Oh, I know.
I have never seen 1941.
Yeah, I haven't seen it either.
I've only ever heard of this, so as we're doing, you know, what we want to do... I want to finally see this movie, see what we think of it.
It's got John Belushi in it, doesn't it?
And Dan Aykroyd. And a bunch of people. Christopher Lee is in it, I think.
Really?
I think so.
Okay.
The cast is pretty impressive.
And yet, do you know anyone who's seen it? Because I don't.
I know one. I think I've met one person who actually saw it, and the recommendation was not exactly ringing.
Well, ring in next week for our recommendation, or lack thereof, on Steven Spielberg's 1941.
This has been a co-production of The Voice of Max and The Movie Wrench.